You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. This is our open source community solar powered grassroots, almost all volunteer, almost all original programming radio station. Great. One of a kind.
Yeah,
KRUU 100.1, and you can listen on KRUUFM.com from anywhere in the world. And this
That's
is
amazing, isn't
and this
it?
It is. And this is Writers' Voices. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn.
And good afternoon, everyone. The sun tried to shine this morning, didn't quite make it, but it's not too cold. It's not snowing, it's not raining, and the wind is not blowing, so I'm okay.
I'm okay, too, even though I just got returned earlier this week from Texas, where I never had to get my coat out of the car trunk. Where I put it when I landed. And in fact, the first day it was so muggy that I was uncomfortable. It was so warm and muggy.
This has been a very strange year weather-wise all over the country. Tornadoes, which is not tornado season. Yeah. And I understand there were some in Texas after you left.
Yeah,
Not good.
And of course, it's still very dry down there too, which.
I know they lost hundreds of trees, not only with the fires, but with the drought. I know. Yeah.
So that's not a good thing either. Well, today we do have a good thing.
Yes, we do. We have a very, very interesting guest, and it is Seth Braun, and he is a he is a wild card in the game of life. His life is geared towards creative entrepreneurs, and the delights and dilemmas of the creative process in business. And there's a lot of things going on in business today, and he has a handle on how to manage it. He is a father of two lovely girls and is married to his gorgeous wife, Anna Victoria, and they live here in Fairfield, Iowa. Welcome, professional speaker and author and trainee Seth Braun.
And the title of his book, which is just being published, is Indestructible Success, Creative Entrepreneurship and the Art of Small Business. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Seth.
Good morning. Thanks for having me here.
I think it's afternoon, but that's good anyway.
Well, it'll be morning for those who listen on Monday.
That
so
is
you're
true.
Okay.
So you're ahead of the Great. You're a well, little bit ahead of the
Well,
game.
Like you, I got home last night from a long trip. And so I'm still in trip mode, trip mind, travel
head. Where were you?
I was in Las Vegas once again, third time in about 45 days. There's so many conferences going on there, and as a professional speaker.
That's the place to be.
It's the place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're still on is it mountain time
That's
there?
Pacific time.
Yeah. Okay,
oh, is it
so
Pacific
then it
time?
Is morning.
Exactly.
That 3 hours?
3 hours.
3 hours. Yeah. I wonder, I thought it was mountain.
It's two from here. 2 hours.
Oh, yeah,
from
2 hours.
Here.
That's right.
Yeah. Three hours from the East Coast.
And then I had a client call this morning who was in mountain time, and I messed that up. So the time zone thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So mountain time is 1 hour from here.
And Pacific,
and Pacific
two.
Is
yeah,
two.
My daughter's now in Pacific time, and this is the first time that she has lived in a different time zone than I do. And it makes it harder for us to connect, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. We're not quite in sync as much as we have been in the past. So tell us a little bit about Indestructible Success.
Great. I can tell you that it's taken 3.5 years to get this book done.
I can believe it.
And I can tell you that my first book, Healthy, Fast, and Cheap, was a stroke of luck. You know, there's this concept called beginner's luck. You may have heard of it.
Yes.
In fact, in one of my favorite books, Paulo Coelho is one of my favorite authors. He wrote a book called The Alchemist. And in this book, The Alchemist, he talks about this guy's journey of self-discovery and discovering the truths of the world. And one of the principles he talks about is the law of favorability or beginner's luck. When you start something, there's oftentimes, you know, just things kind of go your way. And my first book I ever wrote just went my way. And I love writing. I don't claim to be good at it, but I love doing it. And I do it a lot. And I think anyone who does anything a lot gets good at it eventually. So the first book, I wrote it. I just lucked out with a designer that was awesome. She laid out dozens of books, and then her husband ended up editing it, and they had some ISBN numbers. They just took the Word document and some things I sketched and turned it into a book, and that book ended up getting picked up by a publisher and sold 30,000 copies.
Wow.
So just luck all the way down. It was just really cool. And it's a good book. I mean, healthy, fast, and cheap.
What's it about?
It's called The Ultimate College Cookbook, and then when it got picked up by the publisher, they retitled it to The Leaving Home Survival Guide.
Ah.
Very fun, very hip, kind of healthy, quick ways that college students and young people can eat something other than ramen noodles and pizza. You know? And I went to Naropa University in Boulder. And I basically stole all the cool ideas that everybody that I hung out with had and put them into a book. And basically, that was 2000, 2003. We were living on $150 a month food budget, you know, per person in a house. And it was like all the tricks that we had to eat well, because we also wanted to eat well, like good tasting food. Not to digress. The point here is that Indestructible Success took 3.5 years. And it was like... life was saying, oh, so you really want to write books? Well, try this out. And I think I've made every...
It's not as easy as you think
exactly.
It is.
I think I made every possible mistake you could make in the publishing process, in the creative process, in terms of having the muse take me for a ride, in a way. And yet I love it, too. You know, there's a quality of creating anything. I'm trained as a performer and musician.
Okay.
So I guess one of the advantages I have going for me is I don't think I need to be good as a writer, and I think that's actually an asset, because I think a lot of I have a lot of friends who are professional writers. And as a musician, I have this nagging voice in my mind about comparing myself to others or how good am I and all these other things. But as a writer, I just don't really have that because I don't feel I never was trained.
You don't identify.
That's good.
You know, and I think that's a real asset.
Oh, it is.
or your identity isn't.
My identity isn't tied up as a writer.
Right.
And so I can just do it. And I could, like we I was saying, anything that you just do, and eventually you become better and better at it. And I really believe that although this book is not a writerly book in terms of, I have writer friends, and I know how much time they spend beating on the craft of writing and just taking a sentence and crafting it and language, and I spelled dilemma wrong in my introduction that I wrote today, and all the different things that writers know how to do better than me. But I brought some of that to the table with this book. I really labored over the quality of the structure and the content and the poetic nature. Like, I didn't want it just to be a business and success book that was dry. I wanted to have an authentic voice. So as you can see, I'm passionate about the book. I'm really into the content of the book, and I wrote it in a way that I think is fresh and hip and people can relate to, especially creatives, because it's really kind of a business book for other creative people.
Indeed it is. The self-examinations, the little, you know, things you can do to move things along.
Yes.
And that's of course what happens. That's of course what happens sometimes. Is my mic not working?
Well, it's working, but it wasn't getting loud enough. So I'm thinking maybe we should switch places so you can have.
No, that's okay. I'll talk louder. There it goes. I see it. It's coming. Okay. I'll talk louder. Okay. No, what I was going to say was that that people need these little helps along the way. I really believe they do.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to read a theory, okay? But, well, how do I do this? How do I put this into practice? Well,
yes.
You tell them how to put it into practice.
Yeah, that's true.
Now,
thank
Seth,
you.
Why this particular book?
That's a great question. The book took over my life and said, this is, you must write me. And isn't that how books happen most of the time? I mean, it started out as a success guide for health coaches. I was doing business coaching for health coaches.
Okay.
That was the gig. And I was bringing people here to Fairfield, Iowa from around the country for these pilot programs to run seminars. And then the longer version is that I gave up my practice in Boulder, Colorado as a health coach to come out here to be with my kids and ended up remarrying my ex-wife.
Oh, my.
And
great.
It was what an awesome story. I mean, that deserves its own hour. We're not going to go there now because let's just say miracles can happen, and it was totally a miracle.
Deserves its own book.
Deserves its own book, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And in that process of moving to Fairfield, I had already decided that there was a book that's going to happen. But living in Fairfield gave me the space and the quiet and the pace of life to actually get the book done. And I really was able to surrender to the process of what really wants to be written. And it really was 12 different books throughout the process. You know, it evolved.
So what did
titles
it start
evolved.
Out as?
It started out as P3E. That was the title, P3E, Profound Personal and Professional Effectiveness Training.
Okay.
That was the title of the seminar concept. P3E is one of those things, it's cool, but you're like, well, what is that? So it's not a great title for a book.
Right. You know?
Indestructible Success is a great title.
Yes, it is.
If you say so yourself.
Yeah, I mean, just from the strategic perspective. Like, right. And those were the kind of things, the processes of going back to the drawing board, rehashing concepts, but also over the last 3.5 years of reinventing my work, I did a lot of seminars, a lot of trainings, a lot of workshops for people, refining what it is that I teach, which, Carolyn, you really nailed it, which is how to help people on the creative process have tools for inquiry, knowing themselves, knowing how to get things done, chunking down their ideas so they can make tasks on a daily and weekly, monthly basis, and really helping people make their dreams reality. Take an idea and bring it to fruition, whether they're in business, whether they're an artist. And so the essence of the book is this. And in the process of writing the book, why this book is because I'm really interested in this whole idea of creative entrepreneurship because the economy is not great. You know, I mean, America right now, the facts are there's lots of debt. People are pessimistic. People are kind of dour. And I thought, okay, how can I really do the best? How can I serve the most? And I think it's with creative entrepreneurs. I mean, people who are having innovative ways to solve problems, whether it's sustainability, whether it's solar-powered radio stations, whether it's local agriculture, whether it's, you know, tech startups and all the things you can do with technology. The people who I think are going to bring the future are creative entrepreneurs. So I really kind of geared the book towards that because that's what I'm passionate about right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say creative entrepreneurs, does that include artists and musicians who, you know, are maybe doing the same thing that artists and musicians have already done, but they have to, you know, it used to be that to succeed in that world, you hooked up with some big company and you know, the artist or the musician just sort of did their thing and the agents and the publishers and so forth did everything else. It's not kind of working that way anymore, is it?
No, that's a really good point. You've struck on something that is both a delight and a dilemma, as we said in the introduction, because you have so much freedom as a musician now to put your music out there. You don't need a distributor. You don't need a record label. And having been a musician, a lot of my clients are musicians. My clients are writers. And it's almost as if now, if someone chooses to be, that everyone's an entrepreneur. You know, anyone in any business, in any creative industry, has to somehow think entrepreneurially because they have to make choices about their branding, how they show up on Facebook, how they, unless they are picked up and they really are purely the talent, they're pure artist and they're not geared towards entrepreneurship. But the majority of people I know have to learn entrepreneurial and business skills.
Well, in the publishing industry, even if you are picked up by a major publishing house, first of all, you're not going to get picked up by a major publishing house unless you have developed some of those entrepreneurial skills.
Absolutely.
Most likely. Particularly with nonfiction books, maybe not quite so much. I think a fiction writer can possibly get away with just being an author.
Yeah, if they're really talented.
If they're really, really talented and they're writing something that happens to hit the nerve, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Of what the public is looking for. But nonfiction and most fiction writers, you're not going to get picked up by a publishing house unless you've developed a platform for yourself and you've promoted your brand first. And
absolutely.
And there's a success story I was just reading about. I think her name was Amanda Hopkins or something, anyway, from Austin, Minnesota, who self-published 9 books in a very short period of time, that ebooks. She self-published mm-hmm. ebooks on Amazon and the other ebook formats. And they were kind of young adult fantasy romance genre kind of things. And she had tried and tried to get a publisher and with no luck. And finally, because she wanted to go see the Muppets in Chicago and she needed to raise money, she decided she'd put these books up as ebooks, sell them for $1, $2. And she ended up selling over a million copies of her books that way. But now she has been picked up by a major publishing house, and she's really quite relieved to not have to do that part of it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, how many people who may be listening who are creative, who are already doing this stuff, don't like it? It's probably a large percentage of creatives who are doing things to run their business because that's what they have to do to get their work out there. I think the dream for a lot of creatives is to find that agent, the publicist, the administrator, whoever, so that they can kind of drop in and just be that follow the muse.
Mm-hmm. Next week on Writers' Voices, we have a publicist from Penguin Books as our guest, who's going to talk about it from the other side.
Can I come and meet this publicist?
Well, she'll be on the phone. Yeah, it'll be a phone interview, but definitely.
Can you give her a recommendation?
Sure.
Speaking of business, Monica, let's talk about this here. Let's create a win-win situation here.
Well, there's a lot of self-publishing now, which is something, you know, in my youth it was never even thought of.
So I'm guessing that your book is self-published.
This one is self-published. Now, that's an interesting story.
Okay.
Would you like to hear that?
I would. Okay. Before we start, I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Seth Braun, the author of Indestructible Success, Creative Entrepreneurship, and the Art of Small Business, which is available.
It's available at the website now, SethBraun.com.
Okay.
SethBraun.com.
B-R-A-U-N.
Yes, and it will be on Amazon here in a couple weeks.
And also available for order from your local independent bookstore.
Absolutely. Yeah, yes. We'll have the full distribution channels.
Great.
Yep. So the story here is we started out publishing with a vanity press kind of print-on-demand model. I was going to go with low overhead, print-on-demand, and really focus on selling them online and try out a business model of, you know, search engine optimized, social media optimized, conversation online, and then sell the book and maybe make a couple bucks a book. And then, but there's no overhead, you know, print-on-demand option. Mm-hmm. This is a cool model.
And what that means is that you only pay for the books as you sell them.
That's
right. You don't have to invest any money
in boxes.
Right.
So because there's a certain amount of design that you have to invest.
Yeah, you have to pay for the layout, the design, and the editing, and all the kind of production costs, which are variable and depending on how much you do yourself. And that's in light of the fact that my first book, I bought 2,000 copies, you know, from a printer. And I remember my wife laughs about it because we were in this tiny cinder block apartments in Boulder, you know, like maybe 800 square feet, you know, a new baby. And just my home office was in there. And, you know, it was one of these things where we had a outside storage attached to the apartment. And then the truck comes and unloads these huge pallets, you know, 2,000 books. It's just,
they take up more room than you expect.
Yeah, it really was. It was like, oh my God, what have we gotten ourselves into? And a lot of people think it's like a sexy, cool thing to be an author. But really, an author in my world was a guy who carried around heavy boxes of books a lot. You know, moving and traveling and just all of the...
Yes.
And so having gone through that process, then having been picked up by a publisher and seeing, you know, 25,000 copies of my book sold and never really touching it. And so I really got clear on, okay, let me try this other thing called print on demand, because I've experienced self-publishing, I've experienced publishing, let me try print on demand. So I tried a company called Author House. I'm gonna name names here.
Please,
so people know.
Yeah.
I tried a company called Author House based on a recommendation from another organization. I don't think they knew. I think they just met like networking event, and they said, "Yo, here's somebody."
I'm thinking I've heard of this, and it's not a good, not a happy ending.
And so I'm working with Author House, and first I was going to publish this. Then I was like, "No, let me publish this other book because I've got a couple other manuscripts that I've written." And then I switched back, and I was kind of stalling, and I hadn't started, didn't start. I finally was like, "Okay, I'm committing. We're going to publish this thing." I start working with them, and then it's just some weird stuff starts happening. My rep, rep on the production end quits, but I don't know for 3 weeks, and I'm like, why isn't he returning my calls or my emails? And then just a lot of weird stuff. Like at one point, I sent them a Photoshop copy mock-up of what I was thinking for the cover because they weren't quite getting this. You're supposed to, for these print-on-demand publishers, these vanity things, customer service is generally not high, and you have to do a lot yourself. It's kind of like graduate school admissions. Like, mm-hmm. You have to like fill out a lot of paperwork. Now, as a creative individual, the reason I work for myself and the reason I do all these things is because I don't want to fill out paperwork and apply and do these. I want to do my own thing. So I'm filling these out in triplicate and all the, like, you know, what color do you want? What area? What font? All these kind of questions. Like, can I just send you an idea of what I want? So I send them this Photoshop cover mock-up and I say, this is the idea that I want. And then they send me their cover design back and it's my Photoshop. It's my Photoshop mock-up, like, on no changes. And they're like, here's your cover. Well, come on. What is this?
Oh.
And so it's just that's a one example of dozens of things that happen. And to the point of the story, then I was on the phone with one of their folks and I said, listen, you know, this is just crazy. There's just one thing after another. And the person on the other end said, yeah, I'm surprised they're still in business, to be honest with you, because I experience this a lot with customers. I said, now, listen, if your employees are telling people this on the phone.
That is not a
good sign.
That's not good. So I basically ate $2,000 on that process. And I had a hundred copies of the book that kind of came with it. And, well, 25 came with it, and then 75 extra came with it because I was like, look, you guys are dropping the ball. So I was able to kind of print preview a version and then give that out to 100 people. And it was actually turned out to be a really cool thing because I got 100 people to that was my second reading. I had 30 people read a first draft and then 100 people read this like second draft.
Wow, you're a glutton for feedback.
Yeah, and that really, I believe, created a much higher quality book.
But how... Okay, 100 people read it. They probably all didn't take time to actually comment and so forth. But say a significant portion did.
Sure.
How in the world did you filter all those comments and absorb them and decide which ones made sense and which ones? Because I've having been through similar processes, you're going to have one person say A and another person say the exact opposite of A.
Absolutely.
And how do you decide which comments to take and incorporate into your final manuscript?
Well, then you add to that what the editors say, and then hiring an editor. So between all the people's feedback and then a couple different proofreaders and editors, and then, you know, friends, spouse, everyone's got some kind of little...
Yep. So they all want to put their mark on it, don't they?
So in this case, two really clear examples. One was someone said, there's not enough stories from your personal life in there. That was early on in the first round of the 30 that I sent out. They said, you know, there's not enough earn the right. You know, it's indestructible success. Talk about, well, who gives you, you know,
why should we listen
to you?
Yeah, what makes you the expert?
So I was like,
this?
Good point. So I filled the book with all these stories of overcoming obstacles and challenges and just great stories. And then the second time I sent them out to the 100, you know, a lot of the feedback was, you know, it's kind of...
too much the Seth story?
Too much, you know, it's a little bit too much Seth going on. Like, you know, and they were right. There was a middle ground that had to happen.
Right.
The other one was, I write a lot online, and there's a quality of writing, whether it's emails or blogs or anything for online, where you need to use a lot of white space. Because it's people scan and they're working very fast and they don't like big blocks of text. This is also promotional writing, copywriting. These are principles. So when I first wrote the book, I was writing that way, you know, kind of the format and the layout. And when it was working with the second 100 that I sent out, you know, I got feedback. Now, I want to say this about feedback. This is pretty much how feedback goes for Seth Braun when any kind of creative project. So I'll send these out, and then the feedback will start coming in, or I'll have a conversation. Someone from Toastmasters will pull me aside or whatever. And they'll say, you know, Seth, I'm reading this, and there's just a lot of white space in between, and I can't find your main ideas and get them. And my reaction, you know, I'm nodding, but my internal reaction, Caroline, is
are you stupid?
Is like, You don't tell me. Tell what you're trying to tell me how to write my book. I'm going to tell you. You don't know what this book is. You don't know me. It's my book. And then like an hour later, the process inevitably looks like this. Yeah, there is kind of. Yeah, I guess it could be kind of hard to. Dang, he's right. Once again, so that's pretty much that process of feedback is. At first,
at least
it's
you're
like,
able to come to that. I mean, you know, there are some people who would never come to that.
Now the question is how well you disguise the initial reaction, because if you don't, if you display a lot of defensiveness,
right,
then you're not going to get honest
feedback. Not
going to
get honest feedback. Well, right. Fortunately, having been trained as a performer and doing a lot of Toastmasters and public speaking, I have learned that if you want to be good at anything, you gotta take feedback with a big smile, and the answer is always thank you so much for that. Even if I think it's wrong initially, it's thank you for taking the time and the care and the attention, because like you said, most people don't.
Right,
and that's gold. Feedback is precious.
And sometimes it is totally off base. I had an experience in a writer's group once where, just from a very short part of a novel that I was working on, and the feedback was essentially change the plot, basically write a different book. And it's like, okay, this may not, you know, you may not be the reader for this book, but I want feedback on the book I'm writing. I don't want feedback
marketing
saying, why aren't you writing a different book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So, what do you do then? Because it sounds like if you're in a writer's group, you got to see
that
person again.
Actually, it was the person's first and only time at the group, because we had a group where people were only there by invitation, and that was a test run for that person. And
that's
smart.
Yeah. Because for that kind of feedback, when you're starting, my experience is when you're starting in the incubation of something, it's like really precious. And your mastermind group or your writing group or whatever it is, are you familiar with The Artist's Way?
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm a long time study of Julie Cameron's work. Artist's Way, Vein of Gold, Walking in This World, you know, since I was about 19. So that's 16 years of working with her material. And doing morning pages off and on, and all the different tools of creative lifestyle, creative process. And one of her principles that I take to heart is, you know, you can't be around crazy makers and wet blankets and dream destroyers, especially at the beginning. I mean, we shouldn't be around people like that at all. We should protect our dreams, our creative dreams, from people who are stuck themselves. But at the beginning, it's so tender and precious because it can abort the creative birth right off.
True.
So yeah. I can see where that would be really important in your writer's group to vet people.
Right, right. And I like to, you know, I was in a writer's group, the same group with the same people for many, many years, and we've kind of not been doing it the last couple years, but probably over a 20-year time period of mostly the same people. And I think we tried to employ a lot of some of the principles of evaluation from Toastmasters, which is you say something positive,
right,
then suggestions for improvement, and end with something positive.
Yeah, because you were in Toastmasters.
Right.
You've done that. You did really went through that whole thing.
Right, right. And that it's in any time where you're giving feedback, giving evaluations, I believe that's a good, that what they call the sandwich approach,
right,
where you sandwich, and I wouldn't even call it criticisms, but suggestions for improvement.
Yeah,
in between positive comments, you know, praise.
And that's the same in business as well. When we're working
Absolutely.
With businesses as a consultant, you never start with a business right off the bat like, oh, here's where you suck.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's, you always have to start with. Because this, we're just wired to be more responsive. That's a very specific principle of human development. If we feel powerful, we're going to be able to use feedback better.
Yeah.
If we feel confident and centered in ourselves and strong, we're going to be able to actually transform better. But if we're feeling like criticized, weak, insecure, we don't actually have the resources available at that time to have the psychological strength to grow.
I actually had an experience like that yesterday where we had a consultant in at one of my business locations where we're having a real issue with something. Mm. And, you know, he came in, took a in an area of real expertise for him. He's a Six Sigma Lean manufacturing black belt. And the issue we were having had to do with quality and manufacturing. And he did really, when he came to give his sort of report at the end of the day, he did, you know, just sort of dive right in with, you know, this is wrong, this is wrong, and this is wrong. However, since it's my little brother, he could get away with it.
Uh-huh. I see.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Caroline, what do you have to say about favor, that? And he was there as a favor to me.
So. He has evolved. Well, that's what he does.
It is what he does. And he actually, he wasn't mean about it in any way, but yeah, he just jumped right in with right. with was all the things that were wrong. But he was right. He was absolutely right.
I was
going right.
to say, was it constructive?
Insightful.
I mean, it
was
something.
Yes, it was okay. Extremely insightful. And fortunately, because the things he was criticizing weren't things that really are under my direct realm, I didn't take it personally, but it would be very easy to get defensive in that kind of situation. So,
well, you say that there's the stopping the vision, distraction and overwhelm, fear, comfort, and what will they think, and who are they anyway?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're talking about everyone has a vision for their lives. Well, I don't know if this is true. It's a great frame that I use to think about life. I like the idea that God gives us a vision and that we're here to discover it, and that's our mission in life. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's true. I don't really care if it's true. I'm not going to debate with people about whether it's true. It's a useful way of thinking that I like to use because I feel better when I believe that I'm here to do some kind of mission, and that we all have a vision like Michelangelo's David when he said, you know, the sculpture's in there. I'm just removing the stuff that's in the way of it. And so it's this idea that we get to create something in this life, and how cool is that? And so there are these five things that I say destroy the ability to connect with vision, and fear and comfort. And I think the one that's interesting is the what will they think one.
Mm-hmm. I thought that too.
You know, distraction, overwhelm, you know, we might come back to that in this conversation today because that seems to be everyone's, it's like a social disease that you contract by being alive in a modern society called distraction and overwhelm because there's just so much going on. And that's another point, but to the point of, I think the biggest thing that stops people from really going for it. So they have a vision for something creative. Could be a business, could be a book, could be a CD, could be a garden, anything creative they want to create.
Or all of the above.
Or all of the above. Is what, you know, what will people think? What does my family think? What do my neighbors think? And who is the they? But the they in this case is the kind of internal amalgamations from people in high school, grade school, all the people we've collected over the years who have been kind of the critical mass, not the critical mass in a large number of people, but at like a mass of critical people that live in your brain.
Right.
And it really points to, I think, that the number one fear for humans, I really believe this, and this again comes back from public speaking, is public humiliation or embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
We will do anything to avoid feeling embarrassed.
Yes.
I mean, I was at Subway at the airport in Minneapolis yesterday, and like I almost like left because I didn't know where to order. You know, it was just a little bit different than normal. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, where do I order? I'm going to be embarrassed. I'm going to go to a different place. And then I was like, what am I doing? And then I just noticed like, God, I just avoid getting a sub sandwich just because I feel embarrassed. But it's really powerful.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
And just like not even writing down our dreams on a piece of paper because we're afraid to even go there because, geez, would someone make fun of me if they knew that I really want to, you know, God, I really want to meet Madonna. She's my hero. But if people knew, you know, gosh, they would think I'm, you know,
now,
weird or whatever,
somehow,
whatever their thing is.
Somehow I managed to avoid that.
Now, how did you do that? And
I guess
can you package it up
mom.
And sell it?
I guess it was my mom. She never criticized anything I did.
Well, that's a rare experience.
My mother didn't criticize me either.
This is you guys.
Now my dad did.
But yeah.
But But actually, you know, and he passed away when I was only 22. So, and part of my coming to my own was really learning to not be intimidated by what my father said. And I was fortunate, I think, that I was able to get to that point even before he passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah, so.
Well, what do you think that what do you think parents can or could consider doing with their kids to help them to have that? I mean, I want to do that for my kids, and I'm not sure that I am.
Well, it's tricky because now there's so much, you know, parents today have a tendency to be so concerned about the kids' self-esteem that they don't ever let them fail because they don't want them to feel bad about themselves. And that doesn't work either. So
you're right.
You know, it's like so it's a delicate balance between between squishing their spirits and allowing them to have the spirit but experience failure and learn how to deal with it.
It's like in the school system where they just pass them on whether they have accomplished the curriculum or not.
Preach it now, Caroline.
that's really destructive to the individual.
I was just I speak at college campuses, and I just was getting a training on relevancy for content for college campuses, and some of the experts on this area we're talking about made it very clear that because of this, because kids are getting the helicopter parents who are defending them against their teachers, and instead of raising the standards and having higher expectations, they're really doing this self-esteem building kind of thing constantly, that they get to college and they're not ready. They were a straight-A student in high school. They get to college and they're like, oh my God, I was a great student and I'm not prepared for this level of workload.
Yeah.
And then they think like it's my professor's fault. They're like, they're the reason I'm getting a D. They don't see that it's their own initiative. So how do we build up people's confidence and yet make it a realistic thing? That's like, that could be extrapolated out to everybody, because we all need to learn that.
Yes.
But if you do work and achieve on your own, then that's self-esteem.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but getting back to this God, I like to say, in the journey of life, God has a plan for you. Mm-hmm. He has a plan for every person. And you can discover that plan. That's the secret, isn't it?
I think so. And that gets into some slippery slope territory where we start to be like, well, what's God and who's God? My God? Your God? What? Which God? What are we talking about here? But in our own creative journey, this idea that we have a dream, we have goals, and that these are divinely inspired, and it's our mission in life to figure out what these are and to make them happen, and that's the most incredible gift of richness and fulfillment that we can experience, of getting to create something in this lifetime.
You said that that there's, let's see, you're never going to get to a place in your life that is problem-free.
Right.
And some people don't realize that.
Yeah.
And so then they get stopped.
Indeed. But they think, this shouldn't be happening. Mm-hmm. This problem shouldn't be here. And that creates a whole level of resistance then, of just being able to say, okay, there is a problem, let me deal with it.
Yeah.
It goes even a little further in the Fairfield community in particular, because there's this concept of supportive nature.
Yes.
And so if you're doing what you should be doing, if you're in your dharma, if you're doing the right thing, then you're going to get supportive nature. And people interpret that to mean that there shouldn't be obstacles, and if obstacles are coming up, then that means you don't have supportive nature, so you're doing the wrong thing, and so you should change direction. But that's not the way it really works, because for one thing, I believe that the obstacles that, you know, the universe, God, however you want to define it, puts the obstacles there for you to prove that this is really what you want to do, that you're really serious about this. And also, you have to give nature time to catch up with, you know.
That's true.
It's not always immediate. Most people who truly succeed have failed before they succeed. And sometimes it's in a different area, But often it is the area that they end up succeeding in, that there can be a lot of little failures along the way to success. And I can say that from personal experience.
I think, quote from your book for Dr. Schuller, I would rather attempt something great and fail than not attempt anything and succeed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is one of the number one coaching topics that I get into with my clients. Most of my clients are between the ages of 24 and 42, and they really are the cultural creative people, and they're dealing with these ideas. Whether it's in Fairfield or Boulder or Minneapolis or the Bay Area or wherever they are, they're also suffering under that same delusion. Come on now. The same delusion where they get going on something and they think, this is it. This is my passion. This is my dharma. This is my calling. This is my charisma, whatever it is that you call it. But they feel inspired and they're going along. And then they're like, oh my gosh, I have this huge problem. This must not be the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that right there is wisdom, because the wisdom to know the difference between, wow, this really isn't working out. I'm not suited for this particular path versus I'm wimping out here.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm just letting my comfort zone determine the follow through.
Right.
Now, I'll guarantee that my grandparents didn't have this problem. they had a whole different set of problems that they had to deal with.
Yeah.
But one of them was not wimping out.
That's true.
And part of that is because past generations didn't have the options.
Exactly. That was the difference.
Right. So you stick to what you start, because what else is there?
Exactly. It was like, here's your path and then you do it.
And I have friends who are very creative, very talented, very bright people who have a very difficult time succeeding at anything because they are good at so many things that they can't stick with one thing, because if it becomes difficult at all, they think, oh, well, I'll just do this because I'm better at that. And then they run into difficulty. Well, really, I should do that because I'm better at that. And they jump around. And
that's me.
Is that you?
I fit into that category. The reason I know it so well is because I've done it. So I'm so embarrassed to say this, but yes, I'm good at a lot of things, and because I've had the opportunity and the care and the concern and the support from people to have a really good life for the most part, I've had the opportunity to study and develop a lot of things, and like my peer group, it's been difficult for me to really focus in, but the rewards of doing that and saying, you know what I'm really good at, what I'm committed to is public speaking, writing books, and really training people. And then this idea that confidence, you know, the root word of confidence is con, which is with, and then the root word of fidence is, you know, fidel, or the Latin, and fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And so confidence really means with fidelity, or to be faithful to something. And mm-hmm. and as you said, you know, if you dedicate yourself to anything for a long period of time, you will be good at it. And there's a lot of people my age who are just not really dedicated to being good at anything.
You know, it's interesting because now that I think about it, the people that I know that I can see that issue in the most are people in your age group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Young. My experience is it's young boomers, just the late boomers,
right.
I like to say.
Right.
And then the Gen Xers and then the upcoming millennials really are struggling with this.
Yeah.
The committing to one thing and doing it well. Because distraction and overwhelm is the social disease. There's
Not
just so many possibilities.
Not necessarily anything wrong with jumping from one thing to another and experiencing a lot
of things. Until you find your
absolutely,
life,
you have to you go know. Through that.
Yeah,
yeah. There's and
Not
it may
all
be
your life.
Well, it could be all your life if you want to just try it. You know,
if
dabbler,
that's what you want to do,
know? Yeah.
If you
want to
be a dabbler.
You know, my
that's
father
true.
Was a bit of a dabbler.
Yes, he was,
and it worked for him.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right, and there's no shame in being a jack of all trades. In fact, I know a consultant who says, you know, his business card says, I'm a professional jack of all trades, and I'm amateur generalist, and as an amateur generalist, he actually says he's a better consultant.
Mm.
So in a way, it's a misnomer, because what he's really done is become a master consultant. By being an amateur generalist at everything.
Okay.
But he can come into your business and see things from many different perspectives and bring that.
Well, you're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our delightful guest today is Seth Braun, the author of Indestructible Success, Creative Entrepreneurship and the Art of Small Business. So, Seth, we were talking a while ago about how you published this book, and we got to the point where you decided not to go forward with this one method, with the kind of Vanity Press author house print on demand method. So what did you do instead?
So I started looking at all my different options and possibilities, and as anyone who's looked at this knows, there are a lot of options and possibilities these days. And after a lot of soul searching, a lot of really analyzing my options, I looked at my numbers, and a public speaker friend of mine named David Sheffield in Illinois suggested I contact a printer that specializes in printing for public speakers. And that's their model. You know, they really are catered to people who are out on the road speaking a lot. And they'll do things like they'll ship your books to you so that they're there. They'll warehouse your books for you. They'll basically do everything for you so that you don't have to think about the distribution side. And they do everything that a publisher does now. Like, they'll set up the Amazon account. They'll set up the distribution channel so all the local bookstores can order it. They'll get all the stuff that a publisher can do. And I found that printers and the line between a printer and a publisher is very blurry now.
So they saw a need and they filled it.
They saw a need and they filled it. And that's the secret to success in any business. And in addition to that, they were very responsive to me. They got back right away. The president of the company gets back to me like immediately when I have a problem. And with Author House, it was like 24 hours, you know, and then I might hear from somebody, or 48 hours, just not what I needed. And so I looked at this and I said, well, I'm going to go ahead and bite the bullet, buy the ISBN numbers. And so I learned how to do the ISBN and Library of Congress myself. And then, like a fool, I decided to organize all of the layout. Not that I did the layout or the cover design, but I coordinated the whole team bringing the book together, thinking, okay, I can do this. And man, talk about making mistake after, just in terms of like the sequencing and timing of publishing a book and not knowing which things to do first and how to prepare ahead of time, and little things like, you know, just the specific type of PDF file in Illustrator and getting it to them at the right time and asking the right questions so it doesn't have to be sent back 2 weeks later when they're in a different phase. These little production things that if you just know ahead of time, one simple question can save you 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So I learned a lot, and I am pleased, though, to be self-publishing, because I think I can sell a lot of copies of books myself. And I made 15 cents a book on my book that got picked up by a publisher. And, you know, my margin is going to be really, really good. From a business perspective, the margins are really good. Unfortunately, a lot of writers aren't good marketers.
Right.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's not their...
That's not their bag.
No.
So I've really dedicated myself to being a good marketer over the last 3 years. And that's been a challenging process. I mean, it wasn't a natural fit for me. I had to learn to really embrace it. In fact, the thing I would share with people, if you have a book or you have something that you want to give to the world and you know you need to market and there's some resistance, what helped me is to think, I believe in my book. I believe in the message of my book, and I believe that it's very helpful for people. And I believe I have a moral obligation to share this story, these words, that it'll help people have a better life. It'll help communities and cities and the nation. And because I have a moral obligation to share this, I need to do whatever it takes to be able to get it out to as many people as possible. So therefore, I need to learn good quality, transparent, authentic marketing to do that.
Well, Seth, we're almost out of time.
Really?
So, yes, we have about 7 minutes. So why don't we sneak in a little reading here for
Great.
The book so you can share some of the words with our listeners.
Excellent. I'd like to read this from the introduction.
Great.
From the introduction of Indestructible Success, Creative Entrepreneurship and the Art of Small Business, we live in an age of overwhelm. To live well in the age of overwhelm means having a compelling vision, taking meaningful action, cultivating courage, and developing confidence. Instead of getting stuck in hating the distractions and stresses of our time, we can get stronger by seeing the opportunity inherent in the problem. The opportunity is to step into the integral age and to develop more robust systems for inner and outer skillfulness. You can meet the complexity of your life, and in meeting the world, you will become the change you wish to experience. The material you will learn in this book came from what I learned, going for my dreams as a creator, then helping other people go for their dreams as a coach. This has made me an entrepreneur and a small business owner. I could go on there, but I think that that's a good place to stop.
Thank you. Now, one of the things I often ask authors of self-help mm-hmm. type of books is, how does it feel to, like, basically put yourself out as an expert on this mm-hmm. subject, on success? Does it put more pressure on you?
Yes. The answer is yes.
And I found you had kind of an interesting way of dealing with that, because somewhere in the introduction you wrote about how maybe you aren't perfect yet.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think no one wants to see the perfect self-help teacher up on the stage, because you just feel crappy. You know, it's like, geez, I'm never going to be that together.
Yeah.
And that person doesn't exist. I mean, some people may still paint themselves that way, but no one is without flaws. And so I think the next generation of authentic, transparent personal growth and development material, anyone who's worth their weight in the field has to say, you know what? We're all working this stuff. I'm a guide on the side. Let's be in this together. These are tools that I use that work for me, because I need to use these tools, not because I have it figured out.
Ah, I like that. Yeah, I like what you say. Good. You want to learn from a guide on the side, not a sage on the stage.
Exactly.
That was a very clever way of saying it.
Well, the self-help parts of this book are easy to understand, which is good. I mean,
thank you.
You know, I have read some that, well, I don't know, how am I going to do this? You
know? Right.
But they are, and they're concise in each chapter, which is another good thing.
Yes.
Before you go on to the next chapter, you have the things that they can do.
Just very briefly, could you tell us about the structure of the book?
Sure. The structure of the book, it's divided into four parts. Basically takes people from the beginning to discovering your vision, your mission, and all the way to the end, which is bringing it out into the world. Each chapter begins with a very clear purpose statement. The purpose of this chapter, what you can expect to get. Each chapter ends with a very clear, here are the takeaways, and here are some things you can do to take action on this chapter and really bring it into your life, so that people mm-hmm. don't walk away from the book thinking, oh, that's some good ideas. They walk away with some tools.
And right. that structure comes from Toastmasters too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. In a sense, yeah. Absolutely.
In that the one of the main tenets that I learned there is that when you and I saw it in your book too, when you're talking about giving a presentation, that you tell them what you're going to tell them.
Yes.
And then you tell them.
And then you tell them what you told them.
Right. It works. It's simple,
absolutely.
Beginning, middle, end. But yeah. it's whether you're doing a play, a song, a book, a speech.
Yeah.
Beginning, middle, end.
Putting a plug in for Toastmasters. Are they still going to the prison? In
yes.
Fort Madison?
Yeah, there's a prison club.
That's fantastic.
There's two prison clubs.
That's just fantastic.
It is fantastic. The Toastmasters clubs here in Fairfield, we have two. We have an advanced club now, and a lot of volunteers go to the prison. It's the best club in the state 7 years in a row now.
Yeah. Have you been to the prison club?
I have not yet been.
Oh, I encourage you to
I really,
that.
Oh, yeah. It's on my heart to go there.
Yeah. It's definitely a worthwhile experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You said you have some more manuscripts.
The book's done. It's published. It's mm-hmm. out. And it's just in that intermediary phase where it can be ordered on my website and it can be shipped immediately right now. It's going to take another 2 weeks for it to be on Amazon or in distribution. But if people want to buy the book now, they can get it now. Today, you can buy the book. SethBraun.com is a big picture of the book. It says buy the book. It's really easy. You just click on that.
Pictures on the front.
That's right. Yeah. And
it's
you can
picture.
You can get this book, and I highly encourage you to do it.
Oh yeah.
It will not hurt.
And then what's next for you, Seth?
What's next is a massive road warrior speaking schedule, just getting on the road and speaking all over the U.S. Chambers of Commerce had a successful event here at the Fairfield Chamber last week before I left, and then I'm going to be doing more chambers, some New Thought churches, going to be doing entrepreneur startup groups. It's going to be hot, and it's going to be a lot of work, but I'm excited.
Great. And are you still writing? Still?
Oh, man, I've got 20 years worth of books kind of in the queue. The next book, oh, God. I have this idea that I wanted to get a book out by the end of this year. I don't think I'm going to do it, but wouldn't it be fun to have a book called It's 2012 and You're Still Here?
Ah, yes. Yes, yes, I like that.
For people who need to clean up their lives and thought it would all be done for them.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today on Writer's Voice.
It's my pleasure.
Indestructible Success, Creative Entrepreneurship, and the Art of Small Business. And Caroline, do you have a takeaway for us today?
Yes, I do. And this, you could have written this, but Seth, you could have written it. I don't know who wrote this, but what would you choose to do if you knew you could not fail?
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on Writer's Voices. Next week we have a publicist from Penguin Books calling in to talk with us about major publishing house publicity and how that works.
Be interesting.
Right. And I believe the week after that we have the author of The Blue Zones, which is the kind of the community health project.
Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And if you're listening on Friday, stay tuned for Planet Erstwhile with James Moore. And if you're listening on Monday morning, have a great week. And you can check out past shows at KRUUFM.com or writersvoices.com.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom. Archives are available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.